individualizing. Of course, if little theta was just little theta, that is to say, you just had the universe of thought all by itself, and it had no identity, and it had no unity, I mean, had no individuality in it, it would never get the job done. But if everything was a complete individual action, and everything was operating highly independently, it wouldn't get the job done either. So the optimum working state lies somewhere between those two points, you see? So what happens, however, is it breaks down to the unit of the individual. But the unit of the individual doesn't function well unless he functions with a thought for the future in his group. And he functions best when he has a thought for his species. And he functions better than that when he has a thought for all life. So you see, we're getting an expanding idea. Now let's watch this thing contract in. Here is mankind. Mankind collides with the material universe and then starts colliding with men. The first thing you know, we have mankind breaking down into groups. And we get the groups themselves breaking down into small units, families. And we get those units breaking down into individuals. And then we get the individual breaking down into other individuals. Now, I mean by that very simply, it's an amazing thing. You take arthritis. Arthritis evidently comes about through some sort of a disturbance in the endocrine system, and the avoidance of the injured part by the blood. You get slow flow through the thing, you get calcium deposits and so on. The blood is flowing through the area in a limited state. Actually, the area which is injured is being avoided by other cells. And you get a deterioration of that thing. Or you get too much attention to the spot by other cells and you get overhealing. So the individuality, however, comes about through this breakdown. In a state of terror in an individual, for instance, the red blood corpuscles leak in the stomach. They go away from the extremities. They conserve themselves. Well, this is an overall survival mechanism for the body up to a certain point. And after that, it destroys the body because the blood cells have considered themselves as individuals and said, we don't have to work with the whole organism. And so there they go. And the body dies. Now, this gets down, breaking down on an individuality basis. You can't go all the way up this line and get to nirvana with little theta because nirvana would never get anything done. But when you start to break it down to the point where the individual starts to go to pieces, you've gone too far. The individual has to exist as a unit. And within himself, because the, let's say, the pain in the leg is liable to affect by shock some other portion of the body has a tendency to consider the leg as an individual. Medicine practices this all the time. Some fella hurts in some portion of his body, chop it off. That's right. There's if he's got a pain in his liver, cut his liver out. If he's got a pain in his head, cut his head. They don't do that. Surgery. The amount of surgery that is justified is any doctor will tell you this. He's got too many of his friends who are a little bit too eager with that scalpel. Well, that's get it away from the individual because it's an enemy of the individual. And going on the basis, this is your pickup of individuality. Only there we've got an aberrated individuality and we start to get breakdowns within the body. First of agreement. My stomach disagrees with me. And so on. With the agreement as to the overall functioning of the organism starts to break down because of pain. And so, therefore, communication, nerve flow, and all that sort of thing begins to be jammed up. Too much of it and too little of it, pain and so on. That starts to break down. The affinity within the body or the cohesive life force which holds it together begins to break down, and a person is less and less alive. The aliveness of the person depends upon a smooth functioning of all the parts in unison. And when that is being done, a person is, of course, very much alive. There's your affinity at work. So we see how this works on the first dynamic. Now, I have covered this at some length with you for a very good purpose, to show you the number of possibilities you have in administering processing of finding the central point that you must first reach in order to resolve the case. In other words, let's find out where in all of this multitude of possibilities, where in all this do we find one which, when touched, will begin the case upon a resolution of its difficulties. All the material I have been telling you here this morning is to the point in that. It can be reached, a person's mind can be reached on any one of the four dynamics or any part of them. Any one of these three parts of any one of the four dynamics. If you can just bring reason along any of these lines, you will be doing something. You can go into a talk to a fellow on the subject of politics, and you can pick an agreement with him. You can straighten something out along this line, and he will actually become healthier in himself. People make the strange mistake of believing that just because there is an upset in politics, there would be no physical repercussion on themselves. But actually, this is not true. A physical repercussion in the individual is inevitably attendant upon a political upset. You can't separate these things that closely. So we can rehabilitate this person with the standpoint of mankind. If you don't believe this, let's look at Christianity. Let's look at this fellow who continually tells everyone around him that man is an awfully evil beast. If we can just find out of this individual that we're processing where he picked that up. If we can just key out that one. Now, we're not talking about him, you see. I'm coaxing you this morning out of the thought that you must continue to address the individual on the first dynamic. Because I find in a survey that you're doing much of your processing directed toward the first dynamic. You're forgetting that the other three dynamics are in this being. It is just as much inefficacious to address only the first dynamic as it was for psychoanalysis to address only the second dynamic. You've got four dynamics to work with. Now use them. Four of them. We can find a point in this fellow's life where he's being convinced that all man is evil. Let's say it's an old hellfire brimstone proposition. You know, it's an odd thing. Christianity, there's an enormous amount of love and affinity talked about in Christianity. Here and there you find people who are going along with this and they're just getting along fine. And you look across the same field and they've read nothing but the Old Testament of hellfire, damnation, brimstone, and take a look at them. They're not getting along fine. Look at their physical being. Look at a person who believes that life is good, it is worth living, that man is good, and so on. Just look at this being and you will find this person's usually fairly healthy. And look at the fellow who believes in hellfire and brimstone, and you'll generally find a lot of psychosomatic illnesses. Interesting. You get the connection there. The second one, talking about hellfire and brimstone out of the Old Testament, and he never bothers to read the New Testament at all, he is dealing on the fourth dynamic, and it is some of that fourth dynamic interruption which is causing his inaccessibility. And we're very much on the groove here with inaccessibility. You can pick up factors of any one of the four dynamics. You can resolve them by straight memory, by running locks, and by running engrams themselves, and by picking up circuits. I'm trying to tell you in addition this morning to how many kinds of circuits there are. Because there are circuits for every one of these four dynamics. There's a whole set for each one. Now, if you don't believe this, you run into somebody some morning, and when you're processing them, and you say, they just don't like things, and so on. Don't worry about asking him again, or just on this first dynamic, and saying, well, who told you that you didn't like things, and so forth, or who told you that you weren't any good, or something like that. Don't deal with it with him. Let's deal with it on the fourth dynamic. Do you know anybody who used to say men were no good? Or that things were always sour and would run wrong? Did you know anybody who who used to say that sort of thing, a fellow think for a moment and he'd say, oh, well, yes, my grandfather. And we start getting the feedback on what his grandfather used to say, and we'll bust locks. These locks are not particularly addressed to the individual. They happen to be resident in him, and they would have to be part of his engrams in order for them to have any enormous effect upon him. But remember, what grandfather said was usually implanted in either papa or mama, depending on whose papa he was, and this came straight through into the engram bank. So that some of this will come through, and you can break these locks one way or the other, and you may have this person in very good shape. Now you see how far this goes and how far it can be used. Anything which would tend to break down any part of any one of the dynamics can be addressed therapeutically and rehabilitated with attendant recovery of the individual. And I ran into one of the nastiest bunches of circuits I think I ever ran into in one individual. You can't trust men. You can't trust anybody. You don't dare trust anybody, and so on, so on, so on. Gee, now this was all on the fourth dynamic, and it ran on down the line. You can't trust governments, and you can't trust this. And of course, it finally came on down the line where he couldn't trust himself. This fellow was practically wiped out by this one series of circuits. Now, those are circuits, as they were found resident in some of his basic engrams. We took some of the tension off the locks, and we took some of the tension off the engrams themselves. That is to say, we ran the engrams as far as we could run them, taking tension off them because he was badly out of valence. We reduced them as far as they could be reduced. And the first thing you know, his sonic turned on. Now, that's sort of inevitable, isn't it? Because you can't trust anybody, you can't trust anything. Naturally, a person's affinity, communication, reality, these things are wiped out, particularly if it wipe out sonic. Sonic, tactile, visio, all these things were off. But they, and I point this out to you, sonic was not off in this case because somebody had said, you can't hear. We're talking over here about the mechanical aspects of processing and of the mind. Now, a statement, you can't hear, sure, that had a lot to do with turning off sonic. That's absolutely true. It had a lot to do with it, and there were a lot of these in the case. But they didn't keep sonic from didn't prevent sonic from turning on. Although they're in the case, here we rehabilitate this person's trust, which was his primary circuitry, his trust in men, in existence, and so on. And as soon as this is done, we get into the basic area, and we've got sonic. We didn't have sonic all the way up the line. Well, we had it in the basic area. And before that, we didn't have anything in the basic area. The general deterioration of the individual occurs over here in the mechanical line of continuous pain and shock on any one or on all of the four dynamics, not on just one. If you've learned that lesson this morning, you've learned a great deal because you have suddenly broadened your periphery, if you see this clearly, into an enormous fan so that you look at an individual and you say, now, what is wrong with this individual with regard to men in general, women in general? What's regard to him with relationship to family? Talking to a young lady last night, not any part of the foundation. She's an Aborie amongst Aborie, a very brilliant young lady. And seems like she'd had some marital difficulties. And I started asking her, just giving her some straight wire. She didn't know what I was giving her. Started giving her some straight wire on marital difficulties. She had the doggone bag of cliches on the subject of marriage. And we start running this back down the line, and we get into the base. This girl's sick, by the way. I mean, she's potentially a very pretty girl and all that sort of thing, but she's quite sick. And we start running it back on down the line, and we find that the grandparents were in violent disagreement over everything, and that they hated marriage, each one of them, but were somehow or other allies of hers. And just forcing her mind into the thing and blowing out locks, I blew a line charge with straight wire. She laughed, I guess, for about 20 minutes. coming like that. This can, all along the line. It wasn't funny. It was just the reversal of line charge up the line. What had been rehabilitated in this person? One of the strongest things that you can have in this society, which, as I mentioned before, family and regard for it. For her, this strong unit, family, which lies on both the third and the second dynamic, had been destroyed, as far as she was concerned. So that her belief in this, the affinity of this, the reality of it, and communication about it and so forth, had all been beautifully interrupted. And we had a sick girl on her hands who, years afterwards, marries some luckless guy and then wonders why they finally have to get divorced. Now, she was just following in the pattern of her grandparents, that's all. And this fellow, he's no worse, no better than any other young man. He just probably sailed into her life, and she starts giving him all this stuff, and she started breaking down by contagion his reaction. She'd pick him up at a moment when he was tired. Well, he probably had just enough of this in his own bank for it to really shake him. The consequence, there went a marriage. Now, a little bit of straight wire. She didn't go back down the track or anything. We finally picked up the grandparents quarreling on the subject of marriage and just saying marriage was no good. And that was what triggered the case. This case was then accessible afterwards. I had mentioned to her something about Dianetics, but there was nothing wrong with her. And after this little stunt, she wanted to know if there wasn't some more to Dianetics. He moved right up the line here on this accessibility chart. Now, do you see how much there is that can be wrong selectively? Now, I might mention in passing that there is such a thing as selective restimulation. A person may have an engram bank. I really probably shouldn't tell you this because it's liable to confuse you, because it's not very important. It's just something that's interesting. A person has a standard issue engram bank, American Society, 1950, and first he lives with this person whose aberrations are so-and-so and so-and-so, and then later on lives with this person whose aberrations are so-and-so, and then later on lives with this person whose aberrations are so-and-so. He's got just the standard bank. When he was married to this person, a certain section of this bank was in restimulation, certain phrases out of the engrams and so forth. You see, one phrase will restimulate in an engram, and the rest of the engram might not restimulate. So that is in the business of living. So he gets this type of aberration, is cutting into his engram bank and restimulating it, certain portions of it. And then he leaves this person. Of course, the first stuff doesn't completely go out of restimulation, but it drops in its intensity because it's not being supercharged all the time by new locks. He goes with this person who has a certain aberrative pattern of action, and this goes in and picks up and selects out new aspects out of our friend's aberration and re-stimulates those engrams more than others and picks those up considerably. Now when he goes over here with the third person, the second person's activities have a tendency to sort of die out in him, and the third person selectively, you'll get the aspect of changing aberration pattern with the individual depending upon their environment, depending on whom they're with. Therefore, you can say in this wise that it is perfectly valid therapy to change the environment of an individual. I should make a remark on this just in passing as a sort of a note on this question. Changing environment is a valid therapy because it will permit to go out of restimulation the things which this environment is putting back in. Actually, if a person could change environment often enough, nothing could remain in a solid restimulation very long because you've got selective restimulation of his engram bank. I hope you follow me closely on that. You will find that several physicians, doctors of psychosomatic medicine, have a tremendously effective practice who do nothing but this, who change the environment of the individual. And as long as he stays well in this new environment, they will let him stay there. And if he doesn't do well in that one, they'll push him over into another environment. However, they haven't completely realized that the people in this person's periphery have more effect upon him than any other thing. And so if the doctor sends this fellow with his mother from here to there and the fellow keeps on getting sick, it seems to say, you see, a stupid look at it would say, well, it's just obvious that changing a person's environment doesn't matter. But has the environment been changed? In this case, no. So changing environment would mean changing personnel. You undoubtedly, occasionally, the Korea as auditors, will be sorely tempted and may even do so to change the environment of the individual. You'll be working uphill against an unfavorable environment in which he lives, and you will want desperately for your work to be more effective, but it's being rendered rather ineffective by this process, and you'll want to change his environment. I point up to you that it is valid therapy, and it does. There are three valid therapies. One is processing. That is the valid therapy because it'll stay that way. The next is education. Education permits the analytical mind to re-evaluate its data. And in this wise, the engrams are differently re-stimulated than before, because it's only the data in the standard bank and the ability of the analytical mind which is used by the reactive mind. The reactive mind has no mechanics of its own beyond just using what the analytical mind can do. You follow that, don't you? This can be covered to much greater length. It isn't the reactive mind, for instance, which makes a manic capable of building a bridge. It's his analytical mind, but the reactive mind is merely saying, you've got to build a bridge. Now you pick up the engram, and his analytical mind could build a bridge anyway, and if building bridges is what he ought to do, he'll go on building bridges, and he will do a better job of it now that the manic is gone. You see the situation on a manic. All right. In education, in the educational line, you can affect considerable change in an individual educationally. But you must not confuse this fact that because you have, let's take group, what they call group therapy in big institutions, where they get a lot of psychotics together and they have them discuss a book or something. Immediately, of course, these people on the third dynamic have gone into communication with each other. And the second that happens, the whole tone will pick up. Any way you can pick up these tones is a valid therapy. But there's educational, teaching people. Children, for instance, by learning new skills and by learning how to handle themselves in various ways, get up to a point where they actually are overcoming their engrams. A person can work up the line on this educationally. And the other one is environ, which I was just sketching with you. And environ also includes food. It's quite often true that bad nutrition as part of the person's daily life and so on can render him susceptible to psychic ills that would not otherwise be re-stimulated. As a definite, I studied an awful lot on this in Oak Knoll, studying Japanese, that is Americans, who had been Japanese prisoners of war. And these boys, of course, had been very thoroughly maltreated on the subject of nutrition. These people were coming in and they had been most gloriously ruined one way or the other, and it was odd what this had done to their aberrative patterns when they were under the onus of very bad nutrition and so on. Their ethic level just fell to pieces on them. A bunch of these boys in a camp, we think of our brave boys being over in a prison camp in Manchuria during the last war, and we think of them acting as heroes, and no, they did not. The second the pressure of combat, the second they were helpless, and the second their nutritional lines came way down, their aberrations re-stimulated to such a degree that the bulk of them behaved practically no better than beasts. Gruesome. I don't think one would ever write any part of that cycle or put it out. It's just bad stuff to have around the society. It might be contagious. Now, there's your three therapies. So, let's look at what education complements. Go back and take a look at education. We find out that education immediately complements reality because it has to do with truth, what's true, what isn't true, what agrees with what, selects out data. It picks up because one is communicating with other people, with subjects, with the material universe, with man, and so on, via this educational process. This picks up. And of course, if those pick up, affinity is going to pick up too. So you see, this is a limiting factor on how education should be administered. Any education which is administered, which is false, or about which the person is not permitted himself to think, it's just given to him, slug, and say, you've got to believe this. That's all there is to that, huh? That would be actually an interruption on this line. And communication, here little kids, just give you a point on it, here are these little kids in class, and the teacher trying to teach them something, and she punishes them every time they talk. Interesting, isn't it? Why do kids start hating school? People are interrupting their communication lines continually in school. And this is education. Education should do exactly the opposite. It should build up their communication lines. And that means all communication lines. If you did that, kids wouldn't hate school. See, because you start breaking down the kid's own communication lines that he considers are important, naturally his affinity goes down. So he hates school. Rather obvious, isn't it? So here, in other words, would be education at work as far as environment is concerned, trying to get the person into a friendlier environment or one in which he himself can triumph. He himself or his group can triumph. You see, thought is in contest in trying to take over mess. Sometimes you get a man out to a point where he's doing an active job. He's handling material objects. He is up against material dangers, which are very easy to locate and spot and do something about. And he can win in this process. Why, very often you've so completely rehabilitated them that you can just forget about any other kind of processing. Well, that's an environment. Now, that's rather simple how that comes about. He goes into communication with Mest. You know, a fellow sitting around in a Morris chair reading a book is not very much in communication with the material universe. He isn't out there feeling it, seeing it, hearing it, so on. He's just sort of taking a second-hand bite on it. So he gets out there, and all of a sudden, his sense of reality goes way up. There is nothing which improves a person's sense of reality like maybe a 50-mile gale in the face. Let him argue with that. So his sense of reality starts to go up. He is communicating, tactile, his various perceptics. You see how we define communication. His various perceptics start up because he's right up against these things, and he becomes more aware of himself, and of course his communication goes up, and his affinity for himself goes up. That's quite remarkable. One might even go so far as to say that the deterioration of the mind of man began to take place when man is an individual no longer had to combat the elements. Because at this time, he started to go out of direct communication with the material universe, completely direct, you see, and he started to ease up on it, and the necessity level wasn't kicked up there continually. So we spot what kind of an environment it would be which would be most favorable to this individual, and it would be one which would absorb his external attention, pick him up, his various environmental factors and so forth. That would take his attention completely. We would have his sense of reality going up. We would get with that his communication and affinity. So we've got the same thing across the board. And remember that his education can be done on any one of the dynamics, and his own environmental change can be done on any one of the dynamics. For instance, the reality. You want to find these partings, deaths, sudden shutoffs in various lines, and here's what you get. Now, we estimate a case in terms of where you can enter the case. You look at this chart, you see, and you find out where your case plots on this chart. And that tells you what part of standard procedure to start on. This is a guide, you might say. We've got this person exteriorized all the way down the track. He's watching himself. He has evidently a low sense of reality. Maybe he has a little trouble talking to you, and so on. These various things, you get an estimate on that case. How serious is it? Well, this person is in a fairly serious state. Actually, you'd probably enter the case clear up here. You find out whether or not his memory is accessible. Sure, you find out his memory is accessible, but he certainly stumbles around about it. We find out that by straight wire, we have to break quite a few locks on this case before we can even start into it. In other words, get straight wire on it for a while and get some of these locks up, and we're going to be able to run really nothing but a few locks, minor things that he can reach. And he's so exteriorized. He's exteriorized all the way down the track. Now let's take a person who is only exteriorized at moments of great stress. He moves on the track, but he's only exteriorized in moments of great stress. Otherwise, he is interior to himself. This person isn't nearly as tough a case. All you have to do is find that moment of that secondary engram, which is supercharging him, you might say, supercharging some of these engrams, and you'll knock out some grief and so forth off the case. Normally, you'll be able to do this. Now, so he's exteriorized only in these moments. You would go into this area here, and you'd start the case here. It says secondary engrams are accessible, so on, run some. Get some grief off the case and so forth, and you'll get him into his own valence in the basic area, and there you go. Now, what you actually are hoping for in cases is that you can start them all there. That would be very nice if you could start every case you had there. Book auditors have no trouble resolving a case from here on down, really, because a case which is entered at that point doesn't oppose any great difficulty. You, as a not too good an auditor, could be considered to be able to resolve cases from here on down. Or if you were a really good auditor and so forth, you might be able to consider that cases from here on down. And you go on up the line, if you're really a crackerjack, you can resolve them from here on down. See how that would be? In other words, this is also a measure of your auditing skill. Okay? Now, supposing he's exteriorized all up and down the track, and we try to get into an engram, and one of these secondary engrams, and run it out. No tears. We try secondary engram after secondary engram. He lies there and his chest heaves, and we see that there's terrific emotional suppression, and that, by the way, is the sign of it. Twitching toes demonstrate the presence of physical pain, which he is not feeling. The heaving chest demonstrates the presence of emotion, which he is not getting rid of. And we notice that this person just can't get that stuff off. What do we got here? We got a circuitry case. So we have to go right in for breaking circuits. Tells you how in the standard procedure charts how to go about the business of breaking circuits. You search for them with straight memory and so forth, and you get them sorted out so that you can run them. And you run the engrams which contain these circuits. You can get to them, and you try to run these engrams off the case enough so as to knock the circuits out of this case. I'll talk more about circuits. This becomes the most skilled operation in Dianetics. There's where you ought to have a lot of concentration on circuits. There isn't a case around the foundation which is running poorly, but is not running poorly because of one of two things. Either somebody got hold of this case and really ruined it from a standpoint of just thoroughly lousy auditing, which can be patched up easily, or you just run out the auditing and you drop into the engrams the auditor let him bounce out of, and you reduce the thing and keep on going that way, and the case will resolve. Or you have got a circuitry case, and you just break it up on terms of circuitry. Break up the circuitry, and the circuits, after a while, broken out of the case sufficiently, will permit the person to get off your secondary engrams. You get the secondary engrams off the case, and you'll be able to get into the basic area and get the person into his own valence consistently, and then you run out primary engrams, pain engrams, the basic area. You start the erasure. somewhere along the line, another circuit's going to pop up someplace, and you're going to have to go back into circuitry again. And you're going to knock that circuit out, and then you're going to get some more secondary engrams off the case, and you get those off the case, and you're going to go back and run a basic area again. Cases cycle in this fashion. You have to get off secondary engrams in order to get basic area engrams. And you have just so many basic engrams available, and you suddenly start running out of those, and you have a hard time getting into them, and the person's sonic isn't too good, and he's not doing too well in his own veins. You have to go back here and get the secondary engrams, which are all set and ready to go. Follow this now. But this is then a measure of where you enter a case. For instance, a person is terrifically exteriorized all the way down the track. You know there's an enormous amount of charge on this engram bank. Enormous amount of charge. You've got to get some of that charge off. And you start getting the charge off just by breaking locks with straight memory. You get some of the charge off by running the locks themselves. But if those locks are if you can't get to secondary engrams, even then, to run off grief charges and the rest of it, you're up against circuitry, so you have to go into circuitry. You see how this works. All right, so you know where to enter the case, in other words. And when you really start an erasure of the case from the bottom to the top, and you're getting a complete erasure, you're erasing 26 perceptics. You don't have to ask for them one by one. The person will be in his own valence, and he'll actually, to some degree, be re-experiencing the moment. Its reality will be absolutely unquestioned to him. And he'll run these things off, and he'll erase them, and you're going. But a case should be worked with until it's in that shape before you settle down to running what you call an erasure. Now, this does not mean that you must not run out engrams which contain circuits. You've got to run out basic area engrams out of a circuitry case. You've got to run out engrams which contain circuits. You've got to run them out sometimes on the basis of a person being out of his own valence, getting no unconsciousness off them, just getting reductions, getting into a chain of engrams which have to do with circuits and going on down the chain till you find the bottom one and run out the bottom one completely, although he's out of valence. You see? You've got to take the tension off of it. There'll be tension on that circuitry if it is the circuitry which is causing the case to be loused up. So you get down to the bottom on the thing and you run it out. You get your clue as to what kind of a circuit to look for, usually by straight wire and by running locks. And you find out the wording of the circuit and you get the person to jump down the track to the first engram in which this appears. You coax him down. Sometimes you sort of have to go down on a ladder basis into the basic area. And eventually you'll run out one of these basic engrams. The tension will go out of that circuit. You'll be able to go up here and knock out some secondary engrams. When you get the secondary engrams out, then you test to find out if you can get into the basic area and so forth and start running an erasure. You find out he's not able to do this, you go on and take out more circuits. You take out more secondary engrams. You take out more charge off of this case. And you keep getting charge off of the case until eventually the person will go into his own valence. Stay in his own valence and run engrams. It should be very clear to you. Now, running a full erasure, then, is what you're striving to do. You shouldn't start to try to run a full, consecutive, chronological erasure on a case until you can really run that in valence and get a real erasure out of each one. Otherwise, these engrams will have a tendency to come back on you. You'll do all sorts of weird things. And the fellow's sense of reality, by the way, will apparently rather deteriorate. Oh, he'll get better in some fashion or other, very slowly. But here you're working against this enormous mass of charge contained in these secondary engrams, and you may be just ignoring the fact that there's charge in those engrams. You try to run one in the basic area, and he can't run it in his own valence, and he's all out of contact on it and everything else. There's charge on this case. Sometimes, by the way, you just start running out a basic area engram. The fellow's badly out of valence. The thing starts reducing. You've got one phrase left on it or something like that you can't do anything with. Sometimes this one phrase is so stuck, you try to find the phrase earlier and it just won't be found earlier. And you just send him, say, go to the charge or the engram, which contains the charge that represses this phrase. And he's liable to go clear up into late life. And you get a live secondary engram there, and you'll run that thing all the way out, and you go back down, and you'll find out you can erase that thing. That's one for you to remember. If it works, it shouldn't be major standard practice to go north every time you do, because usually it's the earlier phrase that's suppressing it. So you got your secondary engrams, takes the charge off of the case. If a person can't get in his own valence, and so on, has difficulty staying there, the case may well have on it lots of charge, but it doesn't have to have very many valence shifters. It has to have some. If a person is running an engram along and he's just doing fine, and all of a sudden he's out of valence and isn't running the engram fine at all, you know that you've hit a valence shifter. No more than that. You knock out the valence shifter, you get back at his own valence and run it through. But if you can only occasionally get a person into his own valence, and he's out of it, and he's wandering around, and he's in this valence, and he's that valence, and he starts running the thing as though it has lots of charge on it, and so on, you know that this basic engram has been charged up by a secondary engram, which was an analytical environment shock of some sort. You see, if these secondary engrams won't bleed off the case, won't come off the case, you know there's death. There's grandpa's dead, and papa's dead, and mama's dead, and everybody's dead on the case, and you keep trying to run these deaths, and nothing happens. There's circuitry suppressing it. So you have to knock out the circuitry. Sure, you've got to run engrams to get out the circuitry. But you will be much amazed to find out that those engrams will normally just reduce. Sometimes they will even appear to erase a person rather out of valence and having a hard time with them. But you slug him through the thing somehow, and you get the tension off of them, you get the charge off of them. And that is the basic area engrams or prenatal engrams. You get the charge off of the things. When you start your erasure again, you're going to find pieces of these engrams. There wasn't a complete erasure on that. You can't run an engram out of valence and so forth and expect it to be gone because there's pieces of that engram left. That's why you should never. Patty cake auditing would probably be best defined as that kind of auditing which ignores secondary engrams and circuitry and merely permits the preclear to run anything out of the case which he can get his hands on and run it out of valence or any way without even being pushed into it and so forth. That would really be dumb auditing. I'm pointing up this fact to you. Now, this doesn't mean, for instance, that you don't ask the file clerk for the engram necessary to resolve the case. You can find out that fast whether or not there's lots of circuitry on this case and whether or not there's lots of secondary engrams charging this case. That fast. It's the simplest test in the world. You start trying to work with a file clerk, and you find the file clerk won't work with you. Circuitry, secondary engram, right there. I mean, that's what it means, just like that. 1, 2. Or suddenly the fellow says, yes, my file clerk's working, and you say, well, what did you just get? And he says, this model train just turned around the curb, and the engineer just leaned out and handed me the sign, so my file clerk's working. No, he's not. This guy has a terrific amount of control circuitry on the case. And you can shoot this out in terms of locks, you can shoot it out in terms of engrams, but it's what you should head for. Circuitry. Now, the circuitry will go into such an obtuse line. Somebody was telling you the other day a remarkable piece of circuitry. There was practically all the circuitry on this case was just along one line. I've got to protect you from yourself. And the case was just sodden with this stuff. And this person couldn't run any engrams. He couldn't get in contact with anything. Just having an awful time. And somebody hit this word protect, started running on repeater technique, or got it by straight wire, I don't remember which, but all of a sudden found this word protect in the case, ran down the chain of engrams way into the prenatal area, found it appearing there, started knocking out these engrams, getting actual reductions on them, and reduced a whale of a lot of them, came up into them and found a couple of big secondary engrams where the darn circuit appeared too, knocked those things out, and the case started running. But this case had resisted therapy for about 120 hours, mainly because the people working this case didn't work circuitry. They were trying to work an engram, and they couldn't get the person to moving on the track, and they couldn't do this, and they couldn't do that, so they just said, well... They said it must be the words not moving. Repeat the words, not moving, not moving, not moving, not moving. Well, let's see. She can't move on the track. Maybe it's a holder. Repeat the words, stay here. Stay here, stay here, stay here. You get the idea. Here's, they're paying complete and whole attention to statements. They say, well, run the phrase, I'm not going back there. And the poor preclear says, well, I can't get into it. And the auditor says, ah, repeat that phrase. And for some reason or other, for 100 and some hours, this case didn't resolve. All of a sudden, somebody came along and said, look, it must have functional mechanics over here. Something's wrong here. Sure, the case was terrifically overcharged with everything. And yet, no emotion could come off of the case. So it must be circuits. Let's see who in the family was laying in the circuits into this case. They found that person, got the key words of it, ran that phrase, got it right on down the bank, hit it in the bottom of the bank, and brought it up to the top, and the case started to run. If the auditors had known that, they would have saved this preclear about 100 and some hours of lying on a couch, getting back sores, and would have saved themselves a lot of time. Circuits will give all of these appearances. There hasn't been enough emphasis on circuits. Now, you see how you go into a case then. If you find out there's circuits on the case, you can't get off this, the person doesn't move on the track worth a nickel and so forth, they're inaccessible. Sure, they may be stuck on the track. Sure, you can try to find out if they're stuck on the track, and you can try to shake them loose off the track. Do everything you can do to shake them loose and get them moving on the track just on a purely mechanical basis. And you very often find out somebody is latched up in some incident when they're 12 years old, and you blast it a couple of times, get an earlier incident out of it, and they'll start moving on the track. That's all right. That's normal. In normal procedure. But you can't get this incident. Most auditors, when they find a guy who won't move on the track, who doesn't seem to be going anyplace, and they have found incident after incident in their 12th year, which is the word, the number flash they're getting, they finally say, well, we just can't do any more about it. And they haven't even touched circuits. And that's what's wrong with this case. This case is probably held, probably I is so drained out by all this charge and circuitry that probably only got a half a dozen tension units left to move on the track. And probably the engram in which he's stuck is somebody that says, well, I think you ought to wait for a moment while he's sitting in the sun. In other words, enough to have held the person at this point on the track. And the funny part of it is that we can overlook, if it gets to the point where you can't just easily get him moving on the track, and we can overlook the fact that he's stuck on the track, and we can start shooting him straight wire, and we can start looking for circuits, and we can start treating the thing as it is, and we can try to get some charge off of the thing. First thing you know, you'll find out that wherever a person's stuck on the track that solidly, there's a lot of charge on it. So you start knocking out the circuits and suppressing the charge, and then you start picking up the charge, which is charging up the circuits, and then you start knocking out more circuits, which suppress more charge, and get the charge out of the thing. The first thing you know, he's moving on the track in his own balance, and he's got Sonic. You want to know how to turn Sonic on. You turn Sonic on when it's thoroughly off by picking up the affinity, communication, reality of a person, not running, I can't hear. Now, am I making sense to you? So, this is the way we go. We find out where to enter this case by looking over what this case can do. We find out there aren't very many things wrong with the case. Ordinarily, taken in this lowest common denominator of every case, can he move on the track? All right, if he can't move on the track, well, let's take it earlier than that. Can we talk to him? That's right. Does he know where he is? Let's see if we can establish a little bit of affinity and by communicating with him and so forth. You just get him to communicating with you, you'll build him up. Actually communicating with him. By the way, one of the reasons why psychotics, he has such a hard time with psychotics, is the society picks them up and kind of manhandles them and pushes them off as dangerous. And they're saying to I, look, you don't belong to us anymore. And they've cut communication with I, down goes the affinity, and there goes the person into a rather permanent type of psychosis. See? I mean, you can worsen it. Restraints particularly are very bad in this. You've broken the essentials. I might have had one half of one attention unit left. And somebody puts a straitjacket on him and says, you go in there now. They have immediately put him out of communication with the material universe. They can't move. They have denied them space. Broken communication with space, you can say. Wham! There goes that half of one. Boom. Now, you as an auditor are expected to go in there and work against all of these things and produce some sanity in this person. And the funny part of it is you can. All right? Personality is accessible. We finally were able to talk to this guy a little bit. Finally, we're able to get him to remember something. And the more we can get him to remember, the more that eye will build up. And it doesn't matter how long it takes. You know what you're trying to make him remember. You're trying to make him remember moments when affinity was broken, when communications were broken, and when his reality was impinged. And the more of these things you get up, the stronger I will get up to a point where you can finally put this person into actual processing and reverie. You get them into actual processing and reverie, you find out that you can't approach any major charges, you approach minor ones, little ones. Sneak up on these big ones. Get I built up to a point where I is bigger than the charged up engram bank. At the beginning of it, the reason I can't do anything about these engrams is I has been drained down to a point where it is smaller than the charges. There's less charge on I than there is on the engram, so I can't get into the engram. You want to rescue from any quarter that you can power for I. You do that by knocking out secondary engrams, by even knocking out locks by straight wire. Anything that you can do to increase the power voltage on I. And you finally get I built up, so its I is that big, and the engram bank is that big, and you as the auditor make the differential difference, and wham, into it he can go. See? And you produce processing. Now, I want to make sure that you know this chart. I'll have this chart published with some annotations and show how it coordinates with standard procedure chart. But you understand what this chart is telling you. This chart is telling you what part of standard procedure to use on this case. It isn't left sort of up in the air so that you don't quite know. This chart's telling you. Yes?
That whole chart on every person
you... Yes, sir.
...open the case because it might not take so long to get down to the...
Well, I tell you, our cases are running just fine in their own valence, as I said before. And then something happens in the environment, big invalidation of data or a death or something happens out in the environment, and all of a sudden your case that's been running here is all of a sudden found to be running here. There isn't any reason to blow your brains out. All you do is go back on this chart again and look it over. Every time a case bogs down, the case has actually just changed positions from a lower point on the chart to a higher point on the chart. And you have to address the case in this new wise, that's all. Because something in that case has gone into restimulation, which has worsened the case momentarily. And you want to pick it up and make it better again. And this is the chart that you have recourse to. This measures a case from time to time, yes? Not on an inventory, you don't check these things. You check these things at step two. You start checking, for instance, this on the second step, and so on. You see how it compares one to the other. The first thing you try for on step two is secondary engrams, painful emotion. It says on the standard procedure chart, you mark it down secondary engrams instead. Grief, so forth, you try to get this stuff off of the case. If you can't get this off, then the case has got circuits suppressing it. Well, in spite of the circuit, you can normally get some locks, minor locks off of the case, and so you just adjust it one end and the other. I'm going to go into this further, so don't be dismayed. This is awfully, awfully easy. You see, I'm talking to you on a standard that you know what an engram is, and maybe there's some doubt about that around here, but the reason why people have a hard time sometimes spotting an engram or getting an engram out of somebody is that they have violated some portion of this, which is the complementary standard procedure chart. They're trying to run engrams out of somebody that wouldn't know a thing was real if somebody hit him in the head with a baseball bat. And they certainly better pick up his sense of reality, otherwise he isn't going to know if he's running an engram or not. You see, that's his sense of reality. So he doesn't even know if the engram's real. It's interesting to test people who don't know if the engram is real. You ask them how much else in their life is real, and you'll find damn little. All right. You can go into... I want to start talking now about your locks and so forth. Actually, I probably should save this one. I will. I want to tell you a definition of all circuitry. Circuitry consists of you phrases. They are phrases addressed from an exterior I to the person as you. I have to tell you. I have to control you. And so forth. You've got to control yourself is still a you addressing the I, you see. That is the form of the phrase. And the phrase is invariably received from persons who seek to nullify the independence of the judgment of others. These you phrases, which are circuits and become circuits, are from those persons who seek to nullify the independence of the judgment of others. My, my, how well that fits some parents. They wonder why the kid has such a tough time in life. The kid says, I think I'll go out and play. No, you can't go out and play. There's no reason why you can't go out and play, but no, you can't go out and play. I think I'll have some eating. No, you don't want anything to eat. Next time he says, I'm hungry, and he's told, well, you're not hungry, you're just ate. Persons who seek to nullify the independence of the judgment of others are people from whom control circuitry is gained. That is not control circuitry. All circuitry is actually, to some degree, control circuitry, as Gene was just mentioning, but there's that specific species called control circuitry that I'll cover in a moment. But circuitry is always from persons who are seeking to nullify the judgment of others. This doesn't mean just that they're trying to control others. That is a secondary method of controlling. There's one method of controlling. Let's say here is Matilda and Oscar, and Matilda has found out long since that she is not able to control Oscar physically. In other words, she's not able to throw him on his back and kick his teeth down his throat when he does things that she doesn't like. So she found out she couldn't control him that way. So she tries to order him around to some degree, and she's found out that doesn't work. And she gets bad reaction. So she takes the next possible step. She nullifies him. She cuts him down enough so that she can control him, or anybody can. And she does this very simply. You're wrong. You don't know anything. Nobody likes you. In other words, she cuts off his affinity, communication, and reality, and just violates it, invalidates him completely, and if she works on him hard enough, eventually, sure enough, he doesn't amount to anything anymore. And she is then able to triumph in her dire danger. The only trouble with Matilda is normally she wasn't in danger. She doesn't get into danger until she has sought, by this means, to cut somebody else down to sort of overcome them. If she cuts them down enough, all of a sudden, one day, he'll have a resurgence. And there she'll be lying out in the woodpile with an axe in her skull. In other words, these efforts to control cause a recontrol. These efforts to cut down and nullify somebody else are all repercussive. They interact. In fact, any government which harms the head of any individual within its borders is doomed. It has started, at that moment, its dwindling spiral. And it's done for. And it may be around for a couple of hundred years, but it's done. Because the interplay has already been started. Government, harm, control, so forth. It has been unjust and has actually injured an individual irresponsibly. Let me put it that strongly. The first time a government does that, it has started its dwindling spiral. And that dwindling spiral will wind up in the rubble and dust which became Rome, which became Babylon, Chaldea, all the rest of these civilizations, and which will be this one too. Gets repercussion.
For instance, the government kills a man. Says, well, we'll get no trouble from this fellow. We'll bump him off. That's very simple. Boom! He's dead. Only that fellow isn't dead. He had friends. Furthermore, the people who killed him as part of the government are themselves suddenly convinced this government's dangerous. It can kill people. Although they seem to have enjoyed killing this guy, they've still got that. So they become a little more protective themselves. The individuality then starts to pick up beyond where it ought to be. And instead of being individual, they become aberratively separate, which is a bit different than individualism. Individualism would be really doing what I wants to do. And an aberrated individualism would be doing what one did because of the reactions caused by others, caused by this, interactions, in other words, reactive thought. So, this chain is very easily started, and it's rather hard to interrupt. I point out the fact that it can be and has been in the past interrupted. For instance, the British sailors mutinied along about 18... they had two or three mutinies. But on Nelson's days or right afterwards. And they decided that they weren't going to put up with it any longer. And they just decided that this is the way things were going to be. They're going to be a lot better. They didn't kill anybody to do it. There was a very smart man in charge of the last mutiny. It was a very much of a white mutiny. They just quit. No ships sailed. They were very polite and courteous to their officers. They were courteous to all the shore officials. They conducted themselves with decorum and so on. And the British government took a look at all this, tried to make trouble, was unable to make trouble, and collapsed and surrendered in the face of this. And the British Navy became more habitable. Flogging through the fleet and the types of rations and all these things got changed. And it started a cycle which went the other way because there was a group which wasn't using violence all of a sudden. It was refusing to use violence. Now, we see this has gone into the philosophies of many civilizations and many cults. You don't use violence. But you see, it's got a limitation on it. If one says, well, the thing to do, you know, if they want to hurt you, well, you just lie down and let them walk on you. Oh, I'm afraid somebody missed the point. What one does is face force with reason and refuse to partake of the force, but continue to give out reason. If one does this, he is using far more horsepower than the force has got. And actually, it is a tremendous kickback against the force. You see, force is borrowed from life's contact with material universe. And life gets confused in these turbulences and says, what must be done here? We know the laws of interaction and inertia and so forth. The thing to do is to apply a force to reason or force to life. And if you apply force to life, then naturally these people, these things, they'll all go off someplace and lie down and behave. And of course, the second the thought sees something kicking back against it to this degree, which is not reasonable, which is force, it says, that's material universe stuff. Yeah, that's material universe, and we're supposed to conquer that. So, whoo! And you get this tremendous boil-up of turbulence. Whereas if somebody will say, we're not supposed to conquer that, but that's particularly, except in this way, because you see, force has this Achilles heel, that it can be conquered, but it has to be conquered by reason. One uses the fundamental, then, that life has always used to conquer the material universe. From the tiniest step forward on to the most complex step, such as the building of New York City, life has been doing this to the material universe. It learns a law of the material universe, and then it turns that law around so that another part of the material universe is brought in under its aegis. And now it takes this section of laws and so on, and it turns those around. It's learning what makes the material universe tick. What are its laws? What are its basic rules and axioms? How does it function? And the more life learns about how this basic thing functions, it just keeps turning itself around on itself. Engineer goes down, build a river. Build a big dam across the river, and he builds up something there and conduits the river one way or the other, and the first thing you know, he's using the river to build a dam to block the river. And unless he does that, he doesn't get a dam built. And that's the way life works. From the moment thought first contacted the first chemical and virus and started to make the first cell, it was conquering that little flaw. And you didn't have to know much, but you just knew just that much. And then you turned it back against the material unit, and then a little more, and then bigger, more. We know more, know more. We're going at such a geometric progression on the way that people talk now about the ease with which we could blow up a planet. They haven't gotten up to the point now of realizing that they need that planet. But as they did this, pain kept coming in on them occasionally, and there'd be these turbulence areas, and so occasionally thought would get all mixed up with the material universe. The laws of force then would get mistaken for the laws of thought, and the two of them would go into a turbulence, and the second that turbulence got big enough, in other words, engrams, aberrations, as soon as that thing gets big enough, life just has to back out. Because it is no longer reasonable enough to take the material universe and start turning it back on itself. Then is the moment the material universe starts winning. So, there is what happens between two people, two nations, children, parents, and so forth, as they have borrowed because of these aberrations and their turbulences. Physical pains caused by contact with the material universe with too much strength, force. This pain has gotten turbulent, and so the laws of the material universe, which are those of force, interaction, reaction, so on, get turned against thought. And every time they do, thought reacts against them, because that is the natural basic line of reaction. Thought sees force. Thought says, pick it up and conquer it. Natural reaction. If you get a human being convinced that he no longer has any right to attack force with reason, where does he go? He goes into apathy. He quits. He's dead. And the fact of the matter is, thought might be said to have just retreated from him, left him. We don't want this guy. He can't conquer any more mess. We're through with him. He's practically dead. And that's the aspect of apathy. No life. So you see, making a child obey by applying force and nothing but force would inevitably wind up into the fact the child either goes into a complete state of apathy. He goes into an apathy in that he... Or he turns around and conquers. And obedience, blind obedience in the face of force, is something of which man had better be awfully afraid, because it's the stuff that wipes him out. Now, when we talk about circuits, then, we're talking about the material universe forces which have channeled themselves through another human being or society and have gone in through aberration into another human being. You understand that conduit? We're talking about the laws of force which have gone in so that one human being is trying, has made the mistake of taking another human being as a thing of force, messed, and he's trying to control it. Or he's trying to force his own conclusions on it. He isn't permitting this other person to be an individual with individual judgment. He is not permitting this person to be a responsible, judging bit of little theta, of thought. He isn't permitting this person to go on the lines of being himself, of being thought, and so on. He is trying to interrupt that process. And that's why circuits are so thoroughly sour and so completely bad. You have to do what I tell you, says you do not have the right to use your own thoughts and judgment about this. Now, when that phrase is given just like that in the analytical world, without any basic reactive thought about it at all, when it's handed out like that, people that are told that thing say, this guy's crazy. So he is. But when we have here all of the these things lying in areas of turbulence, you've got to do what I tell you. And it's all surrounded by pain. And out of this pain reaches this force and hits this individual. And it's the reactive mind now is activated to a point where it, being much closer and much more a part of the material universe, can say to the analytical mind from an unseen and hidden place, you've got to do what I tell you. There's something there that is mess controlling the individual. That's why these things are bad. They get in there, and all of a sudden the person starts to split up into other identities, so on. You know what a person's with three... Here's circuitry. Here's I. But here are two circuits. And this one says... This is a section of the analyzer, see? It's chopped off here. This is all analyzer, let's say, but here's the residence of I. And these two circles, the one on the left side and the one on the right side, are circuits, control circuits, or just plain circuits. They are pieces of the analyzer roped off, and they say, each one of them says, I am going to tell you what to do. I'm going to tell you what to do. A piece of the analyzer has been borrowed, and this circuit says, I'm going to tell you what to do. And this one over here on the left says, I'm going to tell you what to do. And I, here in the center, has a tough time kicking back against all of this. And as a matter of fact, as these grow and get charged, they take in more and more analyzer. They take in more and more of the individual as they become charged up until finally I gets less and less and less, and and your psychotic is one whose eye has moved over into the center of one of these circuits. And actually, I is a false eye which has taken up residence within a circuit of some sort. There is your computational. You might call him psychotic. I is no longer here in the center. I has moved over into the middle of a circuit which says, I have got to do you to what I tell you. Now, just in the normal course of human affairs, a person, by shifting valence, becomes the eye over here on the right, center of the circuit, and the one over here on the left from time to time. So that this person is very subdued, let us say, most of the time. He's got circuits inside his reactive mind that are saying, you've got to do what I tell you. And then these circuits go ahead and tell him what to do. These are residues from old engrams left by mom and papa and so forth. They're laid in, they're actual engrams. You've got to do what I tell you. This fellow's very mild. All of a sudden, one moment, he suddenly becomes... So he says to somebody, now, I want you to go get me a glass of water. And this person says, I'm busy. First thing you know, his analyzer shuts down in the area of his own eye. He's got a restimulation, shuts down his analyzer, and boom! I will move over into one of these circuits, and the fellow is temporarily not himself. He is temporarily insane. And he says to this person that he asked to get a glass of water, you've got to do what I tell you. There is the circuitry passing along. Now you see, in other words, he can shift over in. Now a schiz which is just one of this same situation on the right, where your schiz gets supercharged by secondary engrams up to a point where he is either this big circuit over here on the left, or he's this big circuit here on the right, and there's precious little left of that center circuit, so that I is never in control, but these other things go into control, and he starts changing his personality. Of course, he changed his personality because these eyes are laid in by other personalities than his own. He has been usurped by other people. Thought is trying to conquer mess. In the process of aberration, thought, in attempting that conquest, gets human beings confused with mess, tries to control them, and sure enough, winds up by doing so. But this control is resident, alive mind, and being resident there, of course, plays havoc. Because the thought lines, harmonics, everything's disrupted, and this person is trying to apply force, and it really gets very, very badly fouled up. But this is your normal picture of a schizophrenic, you might say. Now, a person who is just caught someplace and on the track is still going around into these other personalities, moving from valence to valence, so on. These are circuits, what we've been talking about. They are false eyes, laid down into the mind. As sleepers, they're laid there. They're part of an engram, just a standard engram, but they slept along just fine till all of a sudden one day they became terrifically restimulated. They got a secondary engram laid on top of them. They charged way up, and then they took over and submerged eye. You want to get this eye back, you release that secondary engram. The secondary engram takes the charge out of these circuits, and eye can come back up again. You would be amazed, but a lot of psychotics cease to be psychotics at the first grief charge you blow out of them. And many psychotics are, to be colloquial, all ready to bleed. You take them down the track, they're so explosive that they just start exploding in all directions. They're so supercharged with all of this stuff. And where are the points they were psychotic? Their aberrative pattern, let us say, does not alter. But it de-intensifies, so they're no longer psychotic along this aberrative pattern. They're not crazy. Because I is in there to take over some control of its own. And I is supposed to be in control of this organism. Whatever sets the control of I has upset the control of the whole being. So, I'll just read you these other two and conclude this. I'll see that these go out on a sheet, by the way. The person who is responsible for the circuitry in the pre-clear was a person who denied others independence of decision as to himself, groups, future generation, mankind. Every time an effort was made to upset that judgment was a lock on an engram. Every time an effort is made to upset one's right to be oneself, to communicate with oneself along any of the four dynamics, may become a lock on engrams, which knock this out. You see? That should tell you where to look for these things very quickly. Now, control circuits, all control circuits to some degree, but some of these circuits are very specific. They are where you get a terrifically dominating person. You can have circuitry laid in by a very sympathetic person. Well, you just had better take it easy. You had better not work too hard. Now, you know how you are, dear. You're not very strong. And we get that inside of an engram, and it is so persuasive. That is actually a tertiary effort to control somebody. But you see, it's not very intimate. So we have in degrees of bombast with which this is done. But the degree of bombast only affects the tone scale. I mean, the false emotion on this engram. It doesn't affect the effectiveness of it, because this engram can charge way up to where this circuit is absolutely terrific. So we get this nice, demure, pleasant little lady, and she's sitting there, and she says, control yourself, dear. Don't cry. After all, we know for the best, you know, and all's well, and just control yourself, dear. And boy, you get one of those circuits charged up, and God, an auditor has a hard time locating the thing unless he knows this, that here we have a super-controlled individual who's very quiet, who never cries, who never emotes, who never bombasts, who walks through life a very model of propriety. Oh, Father was a nice man. He never raised his voice. Of course, nobody liked him very much either, but he never raised his voice, and he was such a nice fellow. And, of course, Mama went all to pieces. She went to the insane asylum. Mama was crazy. And we finally find out what this fellow's chatter was. Suppress yourself, suppress yourself, suppress yourself. Don't cry, don't move, don't have bad manners, don't do this, but also pleasantly. You see, there is really super control. That's super control, because that seems to say, I'm your friend, and that's why I'm telling you this. Now, just control yourself. I'll kill you after a while, but that's fine. So don't look for the person who is terrifically bombastic. Very often, incidentally, you'll find somebody dramatizing who is dramatizing, and he's being highly irrational, and he's saying, be reasonable, you've got to be reasonable, and so forth, and he's being anything but reasonable. But that's just part of the engram content. In such a way, you've got to be controlled like I am, and the fellow will be screaming and frankly knocking off the roof. These circuits are pretty bad, but these are very easy to spot. Who was the tumultuous person in your family? Oh, he says, Pop. Well, what did Pop used to say? Oh, hell, he used to really ruin me. He used to come home at night and he'd so on, and gosh, the guy's normally, the one that's really tag-ended, you've got a person who is a super control case, super circuitry case, and you just can't quite figure out how to get to this case because you've found already five people who probably laid in the circuits, and every time you got to those circuits and ran out some engrams that had the circuits in them, nothing happened. The case didn't improve. And these persons, obviously bombastic, mean, cussed people that obviously would just ruin this person, and then we find out that it was Aunt Tizzy. And Aunt Tizzy was always so nice. Every time got sick, why, Aunt Tizzy would come over and say, well, it all comes down to this, honey. I love you, and you must take care of yourself. You know you're not very strong, and you've just got yourself now, and don't cry, and so on, and so on, and so on, and this poor guy has been walking through life. Because the more sympathetic, get that sympathetic, you know what sympathetic vibration is? You get one tuning fork moving over here that you strike, and because this other one is in pitch, the other one will start to vibrate. Sympathetic vibration. For instance, you talk into a hat, for instance. Or you ever hold a hat while a symphony orchestra was playing and feel the thing vibrate? You get the vibrations inside the hat. It's vibrating sympathetically because the tones hitting it, the harmonics hitting it, are in the same pitch, you see, as this thing will resonate to. So a person comes along and says, I am very sympathetic to you. Oh boy, this sympathy is really deadly. I am very, very sympathetic to you, more or less. This person's mood is saying this. I, and the individual, has a tendency to vibrate to this. I'm taking care of you. I will always take care of you. Stay right here. Now, there is why a sympathy ends deadly. Because the thing gets in there, the circuit is there, it is a circuit, and it's pretending all this time, I am your friend. I'm going to take care of you. All you do is have to stay here. Everything is going to be all right. You just mind your father and your mother, and you just mind me, and everything will be all right. I'll come back and see you any time now that you need me. Yak, yak, yak. Anyway, in here, it's in here solid, given in a moment of delirium or something like that. And this, you work with this case, and you'll sweat over this case, trying to find out who, in the name of common sense, came in and pretended that this person was this person. In other words, who got an identification? I am your friend. That is to say, we're identical. I will take care of you. Therefore, we have some identicalness. I love you. Therefore, we have affinity. I talk to you. I pet you on the head. Get that perceptive communication. Pleasant perceptive communication. Everything I tell you is the truth. This is reality. I am your reality. Now, nothing else is your reality. Nothing in the whole world is real except me. Oh, this is gorgeous stuff. Now, you see how all this boils down to the sympathy ally and why the ally is so awfully important. So, when you're looking for circuitry, don't just look for bombast. What you're looking for is who interrupts, knowingly or unknowingly, the identity or judgment of another person. There's the person you're looking for. Grandma was very fine. You ever hear of a child being spoiled? Well, children don't get spoiled with affection or by being given things. You could unload. You could give the kid Ford cars to hammer and break the windshields on and do anything you want with this kid. You can give him anything. But don't interrupt him. He hasn't any big vengeance against the world, and you haven't built him up with a lot of force. You can give him practically anything, and he'll handle it all right. He won't break it up, except by accident and his own clumsiness. But it'll be actual clumsiness, inability to handle himself. You could just smother him with affection, gifts, everything else, and you wouldn't give him the car, no. And let's say, now, of course, you can go every place but down to your clubhouse and to school in this car. And I think you better have it oiled and greased every Monday. And I'm giving you this car only on the conditions that a person's independence is wrecked about this car. So, taking the super control over the child will come back this way. That car will wind up against the lamppost. That's right. That's where your destruction angles come in on these things. And this child has been spoiled there because somebody else was trying to control I. And I is the one who's supposed to control it. And I, left in his own control, will cooperate 100% and thoroughly and fully with other people, groups, all in accordance with how much he understands of other people. The needs of the rest of thought and life. I will cooperate. Try to control I, and I says, messed. And there's where your turbulences come in. There's what happens. And your control circuitry is where this effort has been made to enter the mind and the personality of another person, identities and so forth, which will tell him what to do. This is commonly known in armies and in families as training a person to have a social disposition. And if you give them enough of a social disposition, I can guarantee that you can find them over in Napa or someplace. The people in Napa have been given too much social disposition. Thank you.